The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 7, text number 13, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasatikari, recorded on April 1st, 2008, in Heidelberg, Germany.
So, tonight we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is. We wouldn't read one of those bogus Gitas and waste our time. This is Bhagavad Gita as it is by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Chapter 7, Knowledge of the Absolute, text number 13. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Daivihyesha
gunamai.
Mama maya dorachyaya. Mameva ye prapadyante. Mayam metam charantite. Daivihi esha gunamai. Mama maya dorachyaya. Mameva ye prapadyante. Mayam metam charantite. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has innumerable energies, and all these energies are divine. Although the living entities are part of His energies and are therefore divine, due to contact with material energy, their original superior power is covered. Being thus covered by material energy, one cannot possibly overcome its influence. As previously stated, both the material and spiritual natures, being emanations from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are eternal. The living entities belong to the eternal superior nature of the Lord, but due to contamination by the inferior nature, matter, their illusion is also eternal. The conditioned soul is therefore called Nitya Badha, or eternally conditioned. No one can trace out the history of his becoming conditioned at a certain date in material history. Consequently, his release from the clutches of material nature is very difficult. Even though that material nature is an inferior energy, because material energy is ultimately conducted by the Supreme Will, which the living entity cannot overcome. Inferior material nature is defined herein as divine nature due to its divine connection and movement by the divine will. Being conducted by divine will, material nature, although inferior, acts so wonderfully in the construction and destruction of the cosmic manifestation. The Vedas confirm this as follows. Mayang tu prakritiṃ virjaṃ mayayinam tu maheshvaram. Although maya, illusion, is false or temporary, the background of maya is the supreme magician, the personality of Godhead, who is maheshvara, the supreme controller. Shvetashvatara Upanishad, chapter 4, text number 10. Another meaning of guna is rope. It is to be understood that the conditioned soul is tightly tied by the ropes of illusion. A man bound by the hands and feet cannot free himself. He must be helped by a person who is unbound. Because the bound cannot help the bound, the rescuer must be liberated. Therefore, only Lord Krishna or his bona fide representative, the spiritual master, can release the conditioned soul. Without such superior help, one cannot be freed from the bondage of material nature. Devotional service or Krishna consciousness can help one gain such release. Krishna, being the Lord of illusory energy, can order this insurmountable energy to release the conditioned soul. He orders this release out of his causeless mercy on the surrendered soul and out of his paternal affection for the living entity who is originally a beloved son of the Lord. And therefore, surrender under the lotus feet of Krishna is the only means to get free from the clutches of the stringent material nature. The words, Mam Eva, are also significant. Ma means unto Krishna, Vishnu only, and not Brahma or Shiva. Although Brahma and Shiva are greatly elevated and are almost on the level of Vishnu, it is not possible for such incarnations of Rajagun, passion, and Tamagun, ignorance, to release the conditioned soul from the clutches of Maya. In other words, both Brahma and Shiva are also under the influence of Maya. Only Vishnu is the master of Maya. Therefore, he alone can give release to the conditioned soul. In the Vedas, Shvetashvatara Upanishad 3.8 confirm this in the phrase, Tam Eva Viditva, or freedom is possible only by understanding Krishna. Even Lord Shiva affirms that liberation can be achieved only by the mercy of Vishnu. Lord Shiva says, Mukti Pradata Saveshvaram Vishnu Eva Na Sangshayaha. There is no doubt that Vishnu is the deliverer of liberation for everyone.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagra Jatam Sahagana Raguna Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha.
Pretty tough. It's pretty tough being in the material realms. It's a bad bargain. Very bad bargain. We try to enjoy. But we're so frustrated. You see, we're met with so much difficulty. What is the first difficulty? Birth. Oh, it's horrible. Being born is so horrible thing. Being packed up in that mother's bag for all those months, it gets worse and worse and worse. The worms are biting. It's absolutely torturous situation. And we're just screaming in agony, Krishna, please let me out of here. I promise to be your devotee. Just get me out of here. And finally, we get released with such pain, such a traumatic experience. We come out crying and screaming with blood all over our bodies. It's horrible. And then everybody flatters us. Oh, he's so cute. I don't know what they say in Germany, but you know, the traditional American, coochie, coochie, coo, you know. They flatter the little baby. Oh, he's so cute. They come running. Every time he cries, they come running. They're just waiting on him. They're offering him puja 24 hours a day, you see. I think, well, really, this isn't so bad after all, you see. This is the life. Now I am God. But that doesn't last, you see. And then he's subjected to so many miseries. One thing after another. He wants to run and play, but he's forced to go to school. Then he wants to stay in school, but he's forced to go get a job. And then he wants to keep his job, he's forced to retire. And he wants to keep enjoying retired life, but he's forced to die, you see. He's never happy, really. He's never satisfied. No matter what his position is, he's always dissatisfied, you see. Why? Because this is not his environment. This is not his actual home, you see. That's why. No matter what arrangement you try to make for the living entity in this material world, he cannot and will not be satisfied. It's not possible. Therefore, all we really have to do is find out who we are. Really, that's all we have to do. Find out who I really am. Am I a German? Am I an American? Am I a male? Am I a female? Am I white? Am I black? What is my actual identity? All we really have to do is find out who I am. That's step one, you see. That's the theoretical side of the equation. Then there's the practical application. Once you find out who you are, then you have to actually practice being who you are, you see. From Guru and Vaishnavas and Vedas, we learn that we're not the body, that we're eternal spirit souls, that we're servants of Krishna. So how do you realize that? You see, theoretically you can say, yeah, sounds good. Eternal life, full of bliss and knowledge. I'm ready. Sign me up. You see? Sounds good on paper. But now how do you make it a practical reality? You see? There's a saying in English, that's what separates the men from the boys. In other words, and Krishna says, Manushanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mang meditatvataha. Out of thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection, and out of 1,000 who endeavor for perfection, hardly even one knows me in truth. So how do you get to endeavor? That's very good. It's very rare someone wants to find out who they actually are. But once you find out that actually, you know, Jivara Sarupa Hoy Krishna Nichidas, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. Now, how many people actually realize it in full? Who revive their spiritual body even while like, walking down the street in Heidelberg, you see? How many people will actually do that? Will actually totally revive their spiritual identity beyond and realize the body is just a chatter, you know? Nothing more than a chatter. Not really me. I can cast it off in a second and I won't be affected. How many people come to that level? You see, that's very, very rare. So, if you want to be actually satisfied, if you actually want to taste the nectar of Krishna consciousness, you have to come to that platform. One has to come to that platform. You see. Theoretical understanding alone is not enough. it won't pull you through. You must practically realize these teachings. And, of course, as we all have heard a million and one time, the requirement for doing that is very simple. S-U-R-R-E-N-D-E-R. Surrender. It's a, you know, we've heard it, it's a slogan for us. It's like a sloka, you know, surrender, surrender. You have to surrender, Prabhu. You have to surrender, Mataji. How many times have we heard this, you see? But how much have we actually perfected the art of surrender? That's what it really boils down to. That is the essential truth, the essential fact in regards to actually getting free from all the anxieties of material existence is how much we have actually surrendered. And that's what Krishna is talking about in this verse. You see? Those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Now, how many of us are having an easy time overcoming the modes? Every morning when the alarm clock goes off for Mangalarti. If you're getting up for Mangalarti. That's another matter. But if you're living at home, you can also have Mangalarti at home. The point is that the modes of material nature are difficult for us to overcome. Why? Because we have not surrendered fully. Obviously, we're surrendering to some extent. That's why we're all here, to hear about Krishna. Otherwise, we'd be hearing something else this evening. Some sporting event or some, you know, some rock and roll concert or something, you see. We've all surrendered to some extent. That's why we're here, to engage in Krishna consciousness. But how much have we surrendered? 1%, 2%, 10%, you see. That's a varying number for every one of us in this room. You see, we've all surrendered to different degrees. So, to the extent that we have not surrendered, you see, that is the extent to which we are being pinched by this material nature, tortured by this material nature. So, do you like being tortured? Do you take pleasure in being tortured? You see? The answer is no, then the obvious answer is, the obvious conclusion I mean to say is, all right, that means I have to perfect the art of surrender. So that's what sadhana bhakti means. It means the art of perfecting the science of surrender. You see. So how do we do that? What does Rupa Goswami say? Adau garashvayam. He says step number one, adau means in the beginning. It's like we say, Govindam Adipurusham, the beginning person. And the first person is Krishna. Govindam Adipurusham. So the same Adi word is used by Rupa Goswami. Adao, it's a different ending according to the word that comes after it. It's the same word, Adi. Adao Gurashrayam. Gurashrayam means taking shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. The first step is to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. If you want to actually surrender, that's the first step. Srila Prabhupada gives a very nice simile or example in this connection. How many of you have been to India? 1, 2, 3. Okay. So in India, especially in Vrindavan, we have seen the dogs are very pathetic. It's horrible. The condition of being a dog in Vrindavan. They live on the street. They don't have masters. They're all living on the street. They have skin disease. The hair has fallen off their body. They're constantly fighting for supremacy to the other dogs. So they have scars and wounds all over their bodies. And they try to come to get food to eat. People throw rocks at them to chase them away. I mean, it's a horrible life being a dog, a street dog in India. How many of you have been on Juhu Beach? Those of you, you've been in Juhu Beach? No. Mataji and I have been on Juhu Beach. On Juhu Beach, that's where all the rich men, the big business magnates, the movie stars, they take their morning walks. See? And many of them, they are westernized, big sahib, you see. They keep dog to be, you know, for status. If you're really together, you have a dog, you see. So they take their morning walk with their dogs, you see. Those dogs are very stout and strong and jolly. Those dogs that have masters, you see. And here also we see in the Western countries, the dogs are very pampered. In fact, right now in the U.S., there's a big economic crisis. And people are cutting back on their expenditures like anything. They're not going to restaurants. They're not going here. They're cutting back, cutting back. One thing they're not cutting back on is the pet food. They're denying themselves. There's a statistic. They're actually spending more money on pet food and less money on restaurants. So for the dogs that have masters, they're very pampered. The masters are making sacrifice for themselves, their own comfort, but giving more comfort to the dog, you see. And also, we coming from the airport, I saw one lady walking the dog. You see, very patiently taking care of the little dog as he sniffs this thing and sniffs that thing. You see. So the dogs with masters, they are very well situated, you see. So Prabhupada said is sa natta and anatta. Natta means master, sa means with, and a means without. So one can be, if one has a guru, you see, he is sanatta, he has master. He's very nicely protected, he's very nicely situated. And anatta means no master, like a street dog. So this is the first principle. According to Rupa Goswami, this is the first principle for one who wants to become fixed in Krishna consciousness. Of course, in our ISKCON, Prabhupada is there for everyone, you see. Everyone comes, they study Prabhupada's teachings, they take shelter of his divine presence, which is manifested in the form of this movement. And then, following his instructions, then they seek a bona fide spiritual master in his disciplic line for their diksha, for their initiation. Because that is the system, that once the physical spiritual master is departed, then one takes shelter of one of his disciples. In this way, the disciplic line has gone on since time immemorial. So one seeks a proper spiritual master in the line of Srila Prabhupada, so that one can be directly connected with him through the Prabhupada Sampradaya. And in this way, by taking shelter of Guru and Gurus, as we say in the prayer, Vande Ham Shri Guru, Shri Gurun, we offer our respectful obeisances to the spiritual masters. Gurun is the plural form, Shri Gurun. So we offer our obeisances to our initiating spiritual master, to the predecessor, to Srila Prabhupada and all the predecessor acharyas. This is the system. When we have actually connected ourselves with this Guru Parampara, the Sampradaya, the Prabhupada Sampradaya in our case, which is the most powerful Sampradaya in the history, when we connect ourselves with this Sampradaya, you see, and we take shelter through this Sampradaya, then our surrender becomes powerful, becomes real. We actually get that belief from the pinching of the three modes of material nature. Otherwise, without this surrender to the spiritual master, it's a very difficult situation. When I have a spiritual master, life becomes very easy. I just simply consult with my Guru Maharaj. How can I please you? That's a very simple thing. When I don't have a spiritual master, I think, well, should I do this, should I do that, should I do this, should I do that? And it's difficult inside. But having Guru makes it very simple, very easy thing. Therefore, Rupa Goswami is recommending to everyone, take a spiritual master, have a Guru, take shelter of Guru. This is how our surrender becomes real. Until we actually take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, our surrender is theoretical only. It's not practical. But once we have taken shelter of the bona fide spiritual master, fully give ourselves into following his divine instructions, then our surrender becomes a practical reality. Then we actually, as Prabhupada pointed out, it's a very amazing statement he made in Los Angeles. He said, at the moment of initiation, one's deathlessness begins at that very moment. One enters into one's eternal spiritual identity, the moment of initiation. And the Christians say, well, you have to be good so you can go to heaven. But heaven is nothing for us, you see. We are already living in Vaikuntha. As soon as we take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master by initiation, immediately, if we are strict in following the instructions we receive from him, immediately we are situated in the spiritual world at that very minute. No longer living in Germany. We're living in Vaikuntha. And as long as one remains fixed in serving the order of his spiritual master, he lives eternally with his guru in the spiritual world. It's in that very moment of initiation. So this is a very wonderful process. Krishna consciousness. It is the supreme yoga system. There are many different yoga systems I was describing earlier today. There's the Hatha yoga system, you see, and they do the pranayama. If you study the Vedic physiology, you will see that actually there's different life airs within the body. There's prana, which is an upward moving air, and there's apana, which is a downward moving air. So the pranayama yogi, he will try to reverse the flow of these airs and bring them to a state of neutralization called puraka. There is also a system of offering the exhaling breath into the inhaling breath, and bringing oneself to a point where there's no breathing at all. That's called kumbhaka. So the kumbhaka yogi, he actually totally stops breathing and he maintains his life even without breathing, just by merging the two, offering the exhalation into the inhalation. So these things are not easily attained. But really all he can do, it's not that he's become spiritually enlightened by doing that. No, all he's done is he's keeping himself from dying. He's aging, because our death comes the more it's measured by, our life is measured by how many breaths we take. I don't think the joggers realize that when they get out there and huff and puff on their morning jog. But the more every breath you take, it's a countdown on how long on your life. Even in sex life, you see, they increase their breathing. They're panting and their so-called sexual ecstasy. So the more breaths you expend, that means you're coming closer to your death. But the kumbhaka yogi, he is prolonging his lifespan by stopping his breathing. For what purpose? So he can become enlightened in this lifetime. But for the devotees, it's not even an issue. All we have to do is sing and dance. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. And we become the best kumbhaka yogis, you see. We inhale for Krishna and we exhale for Krishna. So that is In that way, we are offering everything to Krishna, both the inhalation and the exhalation. We inhale to get power for chanting, and we exhale, Hare Krishna, you see. So this is the perfection of breathing, you see. This is the perfection of pranayama. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So without any difficulty, if we can simply take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master, sing and dance in ecstasy, take prasad in delight, in great bliss, in joy and relish, the wonderful prasadam, then our life will be simply wonderful. I looked up in the dictionary this word simply. What are there any synonyms for simply? And I found one. I thought it was a really nice service the Thesaurus did for me. Simply also can be translated as unmistakably. Unmistakably wonderful. Simply wonderful, unmistakably wonderful. So this process of Krishna consciousness is unmistakably wonderful. We simply have to practice it at every minute, and then our lives will become glorious, and this will be our last life in this rotten, hellish nightmare known as material existence. So I can ask now if there's any questions, and you have to speak up. I'm rather hard of hearing. Any questions? Yes.
Actually, Prabhu, I'm very unfortunate. As you said in the beginning, that you read from the purport, Srila Prabhupada, he was saying that due to being in touch with the material nature, the living entity is like Nitya Bala, so to say.
Ne? Yes.
And then later on you continue to explain that when we come to Krishna consciousness, we're very fortunate actually, and then we seek shelter at the lotus feet of the spiritual master and follow his instructions. But then I know that I don't fully stick to the instructions of my spiritual master, not to 100%. So that means statistically I don't follow, as you continue to speak. I'm like entangled, you know, in this material life, you know, which I still believe it's not always like suffering, you know. So often people step forward, you know, and they say it's so beautiful, you know. For example, today I went out in the forest for some walk, you know, japa walk. It was such a nice weather. So I'm very unfortunate because I enjoyed this, you know. I cannot discriminate if this is only like the holy name, you know, which I enjoy, or it's also the nice sunshine and the nice birds chirping.
You like walking in the forest?
Yes.
This forest is nothing. Why don't you upgrade your forest experience? Why settle for this forest when you can have Vrindavan forest? This forest, most of the year it's hellish, isn't it? And when you even in the springtime, I mean, there's nothing wrong with enjoying walking in a forest. You just simply have to why not become a connoisseur of forests and go to the best forest? You see, that's all we're saying. You don't have to give up your forest propensity. You simply have to get your ticket to go to the supreme forest. That's all. Your forest walking is very nice. It is called sattva gun. You see, it is a good thing to be attached to that peaceful, serene forest. There's nothing wrong, but you have to upgrade your level of forest attachment to Vrindavan forest. That's all. The mode of goodness is good. You have to use that as a springboard to achieve the supreme forest. So when you go to the forest, you should see, oh, Krishna says you should see it in relationship with Krishna. Krishna says, I am the flower-bearing spring. So when you see the flowers, you say, oh, Krishna has manifested. It is so nice. Here is Krishna. He has manifested. You see. And when the cool breezes come through the pine trees, Ah, Krishna says, and I purifiers, I am the wind. And then when you hear the birds chirping, you should think, ah, Krishna says, I am the sound in ether. So in this way, you should transcendentalize your forest walk and qualify yourself to go to a higher level forest. Is that all right?
Yes, it's a nice answer. Thank you. Can I ask another aspect of this question?
Okay.
It's not only like forest walk or something like this, you know. It's also in different things where I am kind of attached, you see, to sense enjoyment, you know. Whether it be taking a hot shower or something like this, you know. So to the degree, as far as I understand, you know, I'm attached to these minor things, I cannot get attachment to these higher things. So how, in this situation...
Prabhupada used hot water. There's not a big deal if you want to use hot water. Prabhupada had a sick old man's body, so he took hot... They heated up the... You can read in the Lamrita. In India, they would take the immersion heater and stick it in the bucket. There's nothing wrong if you want to use... You don't have to take a cold shower to be Krishna conscious. In Finland, some of the people, it's a sport. They go out on the ice. In fact, one of my students, she did this when she was a girl. They would cut a hole in the ice in the middle of the winter and they go out and dip into the ocean. It's a form of sense gratification. I don't know how they enjoy that, but for some people, it's like a sense enjoyment. You go out and they cut an ice in the middle of January in the Gulf of Finland or wherever, you know, cut the hole in ice and dip in and get out. Think, wow, what a great person am I. I dipped into the ice, you know. It's not that you have to dip into the ice for your bath in order to be Krishna conscious. It could be another sense enjoyment. Oh, I'm such a powerful yogi. I can dip into the ice water. Now just take your bath quickly and get to the temple room. That's if you there's no harm to use some hot water. In fact, I remember when I was a brahmachari, we had a very nice in our temple in Gainesville, Florida. We had a very nice facility. We bought a sorority house. Actually, there was a dormitory, very nice dormitory with four rooms upstairs and four rooms downstairs. Very nice. Carpets and, I mean, real modern, nice dormitory. And there was nice tiled bathrooms for the brahmacharis upstairs, the householders downstairs. So our temple president, he thought, all right, brahmacharis, you turn off the hot water upstairs, you see. And of course, the householders had hot water downstairs. So, but then Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Vishnu Jan Maharaj came with the Radha-Damodar party. And they were all taking the... And so Tamal Krishna Maharaj ordered Amran to turn on the hot water for the brahmachari shower too. And I really appreciated that. So after that, everyone had access to hot water. If they wanted a little warm water, they didn't have to take one of those cold, icy things. Just take what is convenient, get your body clean, and get up to the temple room. That's... Get up to the temple room to worship the Lord. That's the main thing. Be on time for Mangalarti. That's the most important thing. No one's going to fuss what, you know, how hot or how cold your water was. Just be here on time for Mangalarti. That's them. Any other questions?
Explain more on what does it really mean to follow the instruction of the spiritual master.
Spiritual master says, bring me a glass of water. Don't bring him a glass of milk. Bring him a glass of water. It's a simple thing. If he says, iron my kurta, you don't scorch it and ruin it. Simple thing. Common sense, really. Whatever instruction he has given you. Just like you're working for a company. You see, your manager gives an instruction. You follow it, that's all. You successfully follow the instruction. Is it difficult? What is the difficulty in understanding? I don't understand. Why? What is the difficulty? Tell me.
Difficulty is sometimes one has not the not the the mood to serve the spiritual master, more like I need the spiritual master to confirm. For example, I want to do this, and I just ask Guru Maharaj, this is okay, or whatever.
Let me deal with the first point, and maybe the other points. You made the first point you made, I immediately grabbed on that point in my mind. One doesn't have the mood to serve the spiritual master. You see, that's not an issue. Just like you work at a company, you don't have the mood to get to, you know, XYZ Corporation at 9 a.m. on Monday morning. Do you? How many people have the mood, oh wow, it's Monday morning, I get to get back in the traffic and get to my office to report to my boss. Wow, ecstatic. How many people feel that way? Practically nobody. If they do, they must be crazy. But yet they're there. They might even be 5 minutes early. They're there, they have their cubicle nicely arranged, they're ready to go, ready for action. Why? Because their income depends on it. You see? They do it out of duty, but they're very loyal to following the instructions because they understand, I must do. So it doesn't matter whether your heart is there, whether your heart is not there, do it out of duty. And the beauty of it is this, that because actually within your heart you are a pure devotee. Did you know that? You actually are a pure devotee, but you're just covered by millions of layers of lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion and envy. Kama, krodha, let's say kama, krodha, lobha, madha, moha, matsarya. Lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion and envy. So if you will do your duty, then that will burn away the lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy more and more and more as you continue to engage dutifully in carrying out the orders you receive from your spiritual master to chant 16 rounds and follow these principles. Then gradually, 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 all of that crust, all of that crud, that encrusted crud, you see, will gradually be washed away, and then the pure Anandavardhana Das will manifest. The pure devotee, Anandavardhana. You understand? So that was the first point. Now what was the other point you were making about? You say not being in the mood. What was the next point?
I just want to say something to this also.
Yes.
I can understand that this is the first step. I do it out of duty. But how long you can do just something out of duty? You have to get some taste, like food out of love. Like I want to serve my spiritual master. You know, out of love, like emotion. It's not, you know, duty is.
All right, let me deal with your question.
No emotion.
You asked it. All right, I got your point, but let me deal with it. You're saying, how long can I go on doing it instead of duty? Well, it depends how dutiful you are. You understand? If you're not very dutiful, maybe 5 minutes, and then you'll quit. You see? But if you're fully dutiful, you will be... You see, I can tell you what you're trying to do here. You're trying to get something out of your service for yourself. You mentioned the word taste. You are trying to get something out of your service. That's called being self-centered.
I agree that we want to try to.
That's the that is our
energy. I agree that this is not good.
That is our disease.
But it's definitely good to get, because everyone wants ananda, some taste. So out of service.
So I'm telling you how to get the taste. Try to understand.
Yeah.
You have the desire for taste is very good.
Yeah.
I congratulate you for that.
Yeah.
Now I'll try to understand how to actually get the taste. That's the point.
Yes.
As long as you're going for taste, you will not get it. It becomes like the carrot and the donkey, you see. If you're going for taste, you will not get the taste. But if you simply go to please, to give taste to Guru, to give pleasure to Guru and to Krishna, if your only agenda is that Guru and Krishna will get taste from your service, then you will get taste. That's the secret. But if you try to get taste for yourself, you'll never get taste. Or you may be a shadow of taste in bed. But if you try to give taste, let me please my spiritual master. I may be going through hell, that's all right. I don't care. But let me please my spiritual master in Krishna, that's all. And then as soon as you, the more you think like that, then you will get this such a unmistakably sublime taste.
And if I'm not getting taste out of it, I do something wrong.
That means you're still self-centered. You're still trying to get the taste, but you're still trying to, you still think you're the center of enjoyment. That's the problem. You see? You know how long you've been thinking you're the center of enjoyment? It's stated here. It's uncountable. What does this mean? There's no one can trace out the history of his becoming conditioned. Does that mean it happened so long ago we can't calculate it? Or does it mean that it actually doesn't have any beginning in material time? Which is it, do you know?
First one.
Huh?
The first one.
That's what I used to think too, but Vinasarupabhu, your GBC, and my personal friend, wrote a very wonderful article in Bhaktivedanta a few years ago discussing this. And according to his article, and I agree with his conclusion wholeheartedly, it's actually the second, or actually both. Here in Germany, it's a famous checkpoint used to have called Checkpoint Charlie between East Berlin and West Berlin. Very famous. We used to always hear about it in America, Checkpoint Charlie. You probably heard about it too, growing up in Germany. Checkpoint Charlie, very famous. So there's also a crossing point between the material and spiritual world. It's called the Viraja River. At that crossing point, there's no time clock. At that crossing point, it is pure timelessness. In other words, the higher you go within the material world, time slows down. There's that famous story of that king. He went to meet Brahmaji. He was trying to get a husband for his daughter, you see. And the time was going much faster on the earthly plane than it was in Brahmaloka. You may remember that story. So the point is, the higher you go in the material world, time slows down, it slows down. You finally get to that Viraja River, checkpoint Charlie there. At that point, time goes, it completely stops. There's no time at that crossing point between the two dimensions. So that is another meaning of this. There's no one can trace out the history of becoming a conditioned soul. That moment when you crossed into the material world does not exist in material time. So that's another way of understanding Nitya Bhata. It's inconceivable right now. Why? Because we are so locked into the time and space continuum. Our whole psyche is, you know, we're just totally conditioned by time and space right now. But the reality is, actually, there was no time we entered this material world. Because we've always been here. But when we go back, there'll be no time. When we get across checkpoint Charlie going the other direction, there'll be no time when we entered the spiritual world. We will always been there. And indeed, when we wake up, we realize it was just a bad dream. I was always in the spiritual world the whole time, but I just nodded out for a minute in the Bhagavatam class. And I had this horrible dream that I was in the material world. I went through the 8,400,000 species. You know, I was there in Germany trying to enjoy my senses. It was all a dream. But actually, the whole thing was just a dream. And now I realize, here I am in Krishna's pastimes. I'm a cowherd boy. I'm a gopi. I'm a butterfly. I'm a flute. I'm a rock, you know. Then Krishna takes his, whatever our rasa is, you know, in Krishna's pastimes. That's who I really am. And that's where it's really at. That's who I am. And that's what I do. It's not that other stuff that I'm dreaming about. So, you know, it's funny to gratify my senses. You know, sense gratification, you know. It wasn't that stuff. Thinking that I'm the body, thinking that I'm the mind. This is a bunch of hype. Maya has been hyping us for millions and millions and millions of lifetimes. Now it's time to say, Maya, I'm tired of your hype. Get out of here. Even what did Christ say? Get thee behind me, Satan. You see? So Prabhupada said, becoming Krishna conscious means declaring war on Maya. We have to tell Maya to get lost. Go jump in the Jamuna. Leave me alone. I just want to be peacefully situated in Krishna consciousness. That's all. I don't need a forest. I don't need a hot shower. All I need is Krishna. And then whatever I may have, wherever I'm in the hellish city or the forest, I'm in a hot shower or a cold shower, wherever I may be, if I can just somehow or other be Krishna conscious, then I will be happy because that reestablishes me in my original constitutional position. So any other question? Yeah.
Please, Prabhu, please, how to understand that material happiness is just suffering to get more like determination, you know, to stick to the
How to understand that material happiness is suffering?
Yes. This is a very nice question you have asked, Mataji. How to understand that material happiness is suffering? Well, of course, the first principle is we can take Krishna's word for it. That's the first thing. Abrahma bhuvana loka punaravartina arjuna mam upechita kaunteya punar janma na vidyate. From the highest planet in this material world down to the lowest, all are places of material suffering where repeated birth and death take place, but one who attains to my abode never takes birth again. So there's Krishna's word. But do we just blindly take Krishna's word? No. We also understand with our intelligence how to analyze this material enjoyment. So we can analyze all the different types of material enjoyment and see how enjoyable they are, really. What are the different types of enjoyment? Well, there's eating, there's sleeping, there's mating, there's defending. Those are the basic divisions of material happiness. So analyze every type of material enjoyment and see how pleasurable it really is. In the material world, most people would, or many people would say that for them, sex pleasure is the most enjoyable thing. So why don't we analyze this sex pleasure and see how much fun it really is? See how many ghastly murder scenes come as a result of sex pleasure. See how much torture and nightmare people go through over this sex pleasure. Actually, it's a horrible torture, the sex pleasure. If you really look at it, it's torturous. It's a torturous thing. The little child was so happy and peaceful, just running and chasing butterflies, until one day, you know, puberty hit, and his whole world changed. And then it's just so many anxieties. You see, the sex desire. And it's supposed to be the greatest pleasure. But actually, it is simply trouble. It is simply trouble. And that's supposed to be the number one pleasure, as confirmed by Freud and by the Srimad Bhagavatam. They both agree. Freud and the Bhagavatam agree. You see, what is that verse? Yan mahitanadi grihamedi sukam mitu cham. Maitun means sexual intercourse, you see. Maitun adi. Adi means number one, beginning principle. So the number one principle, yan maitun adi grihamedi sukham. You see, the materialistic people, for them the number one pleasure is sex. But Bhagavatam says, hitucham. Indeed, it is tenth class pleasure at best. So why does the Bhagavatam relegate the number one pleasure to some low status in the basement somewhere, underneath the trash, somewhere in the corner? You see, why does the Bhagavatam relegate it to such a low status? Tucham. Tucham is very low status, you see, like spit on it. It's so low thing. Why is it relegated to such a low position? Because it is based on a false premise. And what is that false premise? I'm a man. I'm a woman. And what does that do when you think, I'm a man, I'm a woman? What are you doing? the eternal living entity who is unlimitedly blissful in his loving relationship with Krishna is a spiritual particle in quality one with the Lord, is now considering himself to be nothing more than stool, urine, plus blood and vomit. Could that be happiness? Would you like to think that you're a bag full of vomit and stool and pus and blood? Ooh, horrible. But Maya has tricked you. Maya has tricked you. You are thinking, I am this bag of stool, pus, urine, bones, blood, and vomit. And it's wonderful. See how you've been cheated by Maya? Is it? So in this way, we have to philosophically analyze the reality. That which is considered the most pleasurable thing is actually a grotesque, bad joke. Really. And that's the greatest pleasure in the material world. But to speak of all the others that are not so hot, people aren't so hot over as they are over sex pleasure, you see? They're all just different forms and different levels of being cheated by the material nature. Actually, Shankaracharya said, you simply have to analyze like this. He was speaking to the brahmachari, you see. You just have to see the breast of the woman philosophically as it is. It's just some muscle, some blood. It's just a disgusting thing, you see. So we are attracted. The males are attracted to females. The females are attracted to males, you see. This is that we have to philosophically analyze this attraction and see how absolutely asinine, how stupid it is, really. All we're doing is cutting off our experience of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. That's all we're really doing. Or as another example is this. See, we're trying to get our pleasures of the combinations of the senses with the object of the senses. Just like, what's some enjoyable thing? An example. Strawberry ice cream. Homemade strawberry ice cream from, you know, cows on a Krishna-conscious farm with organic strawberries grown by the devotees, you know. You know, just imagine that kind of, how delicious that strawberry ice cream would be. Now, if you were to take your sari, you see, and dip it into the ice cream, how much could you really enjoy? You may go, this is wonderful. No, the real enjoyment is you put in your mouth that strawberry ice cream. That's the real enjoyment. So this material world means we are simply taking the body, the senses, which is not us, and we are interacting them with the objects of the senses and thinking this is enjoyment. But that is not actual enjoyment. It is simply an illusion. How much you will enjoy by dipping the edge of your sari into that bowl of strawberry ice cream. You see, you will not get any pleasure. You may think you're enjoying it. Someone may, they hype you, may say, well, if you can just stick your sari in this bowl of strawberry ice cream, you'll be in bliss. And you may believe them and do it and think, oh yeah, it was pretty good. But actually there was no happiness in dipping the edge of your sari in the bowl of strawberry ice cream. There was no pleasure there. Just an illusion of happiness. But if you will take that spoon and you take a big spoonful of that strawberry ice cream and you put it in your mouth, then you'll know what is real happiness. You see, that is Krishna consciousness. Yes. So, if you will simply chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, with love, or try to do it with love, to the best of your ability. We can't immediately do it with pure love, but try to do it in the most loving possible way you can to please Krishna. Then you will taste a pleasure which is millions and billions of times greater than all the pleasures which have ever been tasted in this material world, multiplied to the zillionth power. So do that, and then you will know what is real happiness. Is that all right? Any other questions? Is there any other answer? Is this the only answer, Krishna consciousness? Or do you have some opposing philosophy you would like to present? Maybe we haven't really realized the highest truth, or maybe you have some higher truth you can enlighten us with. We are seekers of truth. We are not a sect. We are not some blind sectarianists. We are lovers of truth. If you can show us a higher philosophy, we will surrender to you. Can you give us a higher knowledge than this?
Me? No.
No?
I'm totally satisfied with strawberry ice cream. And that's wonderful.
Yeah. Yes, actually Krishna says this is the highest truth. Raja Vidya. This is the ultimate knowledge. You cannot find any higher truth than that. If someone can bring and prove Krishna wrong, we will follow. We are not blind followers of Krishna. But no one has ever even tried. Well, sometimes they try, but no one has never made anything that even came close. You know, they used to come and tell me, I am God. All right. When was I born then? I don't know. Krishna knows everything, you see. Vedahang samatitani vartamanani charjana bhavishchani chabhutani mangtu vedana kashchana. O Arjuna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, I know everything that has happened in the past, all the things that are happening in the present, and all the things that are yet to come. I also know all living entities, but me, nobody knows. You see? So when he told me he was God, and he couldn't even tell me when I was born, I just had to laugh at his foolishness, you see. Krishna knows everything. He even knows what's happening in the future. Then sometimes people argue, well, he knows what's happening in the future, that means I have no free will. That's what they argue. He knows when I will fully surrender, so really he's controlling it. I'm not free anymore, since Krishna knows when it's going to happen. But that's not true. We have free will, at the same time Krishna knows everything. And we have the power to do whatever we want. When we will surrender, whether we are not surrendered, that's in our power. But he knows exactly what's going to happen. It's inconceivable, but it's real, it's true. So anyway, it looks like our time is running a little short. There's no more questions, we can stop here. And there's, I think the go time is my class tomorrow morning.
1 to 8.
1:45. So come tomorrow. Bring your friends. Bring your neighbors. Bring your boss. Bring your employees. Bring your prime minister. Bring everyone. Let's create a revolution here in Germany for Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Raja Vidya Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.